so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, we're all back together again in time for another toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How you doing today, sir?
I'm good.
How alarmed should I be that the last toy department, which contained nearly no me, was so good?
Was that a pause long enough to disturb you?
I was already disturbed, so yeah, really no pause.
I mean, obviously, Kate's great, but the good news for you is she has far too much to do to waste her time podcasting weekly with me.
All right, well, that's good. Thank God. I thought I was about to be replaced. I hope that we do have an opportunity to have some more guests on this podcast.
This is maybe production information that doesn't necessarily need to be shared with everybody, but I think one of the main reasons we haven't had guests is we just haven't tried.
I was going to say laziness was my chief factor there.
Well, I don't know if it was laziness exactly, but I think, you know, we're just talking heads talking at each other about stuff. And
Lord knows there's not enough of that in the world.
Well, right, but sometimes it's hard to know when to bring a third talking head in and when that's just not necessary. So Kate was a unique one because she did something so cool and she was so close. And I don't want to say easy to book because, again, she's a very busy lady, but willing to waste her time with me. So, you know, we were both lucky in that respect. And also, I think I did enjoy it. And I do think we should probably think about having more guests in the future.
Yeah, it's hard enough to get the two of us to get to a room where we can record this at the same time. So anytime you have to bring in a third person in that mix.
As you see, sometimes schedule conflicts arise at the last moment.
And it doesn't work out. So, all right. This week's show will still be a good one, I promise. We will talk about our experiences as the first female play-by-play NFL analysts. We're going to talk about the thing everybody's talking about, Colin Kaepernick controversy, and probably some college football. But first, let's wrap up the night of, which closed out over this weekend. And I think we've been enjoying the hell out of, and I'll put the simple question to you. Did it stick the landing in your mind?
Yes. It stuck the landing, but if we're going to do a gymnastics analogy, all right?
This should be the first and last time we do a gymnastics analogy, I think.
Well, you said stuck the landing,
yep.
So this one's on you.
Yep, I got it. I have full responsibility.
If this was a parallel or rather uneven bars, because who's kidding? Let's not kid ourselves. Men's gymnastics, get out of here. If this was an uneven bars routine, the landing was stuck, but the most impressive and entertaining elements of the routine were towards the beginning and middle. Does that make sense?
Are you talking about the beginning and middle of the series or the episode?
The series.
Okay. So you feel like it kind of wobbled a little bit towards
I don't think
end.
No, that's what I'm saying. It didn't wobble. It was on firm footing. It just didn't attempt any wild acrobatics in the last moments.
I do think there was a bit of a pacing issue and I think both of us kind of enjoyed the slow sort of languid pace of the early episodes, but I do think it got to a point where they're like, well, we're only doing 10 of these and we're gonna have to get to a conclusion here at some point. And the pace sort of seemed to pick up considerably over the last few. Now,
well, was it the pace or was it just that we went from watching a show that was a lot about the interior life of one character, even though there were lots of other characters and scenes and stuff, we were trying to live with and feel this dude's experience from, like, confusion to terror to you know, whatever you want to say he turned into.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that, but just
so
from...
I think as it went down the stretch, there were more happenings, you know. So I guess pace picked up maybe in terms of time, because that whole trial happens in a couple of episodes, and really that's probably stretched out.
Yeah, I mean, the final episode was really a couple of months, wasn't it, of actual time, whereas the first two episodes were a day and a half put together, I think. So,
you know, literally speaking, in that respect, the pace did pick up. But I didn't feel like it was such a wild pace change, you know, visually, emotionally, or whatever.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. You know, we talked about, you know, coming into that episode, some of my apprehension about the kiss.
I think they handled it well.
Yeah, I think they certainly handled it realistically.
Right. Like, yeah. because if it was the start of a beautiful love story, then it cheapens the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And if it was just a throwaway, it cheapens the whole thing. If it was a young woman making a tragic, in many ways tragic anyway, mistake and paying for it with her career, then it's like another weighty element of the show, I thought.
Yeah, it was refreshing to me to see characters in the show react the way that I reacted when it happened. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
That, I don't know, something about that rang really true.
Especially like John Stone, where it's a disappointment to him.
Yeah,
he, as much as he is sort of was begged to be the helper, you can tell he's put a lot of emotional pressure on this young woman. He hasn't really been doing anything in court. He's counting on her to be the champion in this situation of a you know. Not damsel in distress, but of a Nos in distress that he discovered. He's asked this woman to sort of be the champion.
Yeah, and she really was. She was really championing there
was,
for a minute.
Yeah. and professionally and well, and then, you know, she essentially throws it away with one silly emotional action.
Yeah, I would argue two silly emotional actions.
Well, yeah. Thank God they didn't get caught for that. Am I right?
sorry, I take that back. Three silly emotional actions.
Are you counting both parts of the second action?
No, I'm all right. So the kiss, obviously, we've discussed.
The
purchasing of drugs. That poor judgment. I do at least sort of understand where she's coming from, but it's really that's a direct function of the third, you know, bad choice, which was to put him on the stand in the first place. Right. All that's unnecessary if you don't make that choice, which, you know,
she was told not to do.
Yeah. And obviously, clearly sunk the whole thing. So,
well, you know, it's interesting.
Well, I guess it didn't sink the whole thing ultimately, but sunk her.
Well, yeah. But yeah. You know what? I that's one of the things I wonder about with the.
By the way, heavy spoiler alert. We probably missed that.
Well, I think people, you said wrap up the show. Hopefully people realized. I'll put something in the description, but. Since we're full spoiling, two things in my eyes about this show that I wonder how realistic they are, because if whether or not they're realistic makes a big difference in whether I feel like they had a place in the show. One is the repeated smuggling of drugs into prison. Boy, does it seem easy to get drugs into prison.
Well,
all you need is a like woman who is either being blackmailed or willing to do a really big favor for you. That's what this show tells me.
Well, now, I mean, wouldn't you agree that there's
a lot of drugs in prison?
About to say there pretty much are always drugs in prison, so it can't be that hard.
So yeah, so maybe that is realistic. In which case, okay. The other thing is, maybe I'm more obsessed over the phrase reasonable doubt than most. But I absolutely would not have voted to convict that guy based on the testimony we saw.
Well, yes. And I don't know. I mean, I think the fact that you got six people
yeah.
Who were
but just the
certain,
just everyone
were certain that they had reasonable doubt. I think
no,
that's
but I mean,
a sign
even
that, works.
I'm saying, forget all the. I'm just saying, after him on the stand, there was this consensus on the show from the characters, essentially, that like, oh, well, it's over now. You blew it. But after I saw him on the stand, I absolutely had reasonable doubt. Is that crazy? Am I being unreasonable? It sure seemed like the stuff that happened while he was on the stand. He didn't know what happened. But when his lawyer takes that turn to like, even if you didn't kill her, you killed her. I get the emotional impact of that on Nas, but not the literal impact on the jury, because that's not the crime he's on trial for. He's on trial for stabbing her 1,000 bazillion times.
Yeah.
And if he didn't stab her 1,000 bazillion times, the fact that the lawyer still thinks he bears like responsibility doesn't matter to me. Right?
What did you think? What did you think of the fact that the prosecution obviously had pretty strong evidence on another guy and chose to ignore it to prosecute the case that they already had?
Well, that I think is very realistic.
I think it's very realistic and just sort of like one of those.
It's grim and that was one of the things about the show that it's like a head shaker and you know, you give it a head shake and like a man, I don't even want to know how many times that happens in real life.
Yeah. I understand it's a limited series and I felt like we left all of these characters in a pretty good place. But there's some more arcs.
What do you mean?
Like,
what do you mean? What do you mean a good place?
A good place, narratively.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
I was going to say, I don't know.
Some of them are in a pretty lousy place.
Nas's mom might not think he's in such a good place.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, wouldn't you like to see more on what happens with Nas and I'm blanking on her name, but the attorney, obviously.
Yeah. Is it Chandra or is that the actress?
I want to say that's the actress's name, but I don't know. She was great. And I, you know, I would be curious.
Who
to see
wasn't what, excellent? As far as, you know, if we, the sort of the hallmarks, I think of premier TV or whatever you want to call it, are, well, you know, I guess they're the same hallmarks of any like visual thing with directing and acting and writing. But those were all just spectacular in this.
Yeah,
it was so well acted on every level by the bit players up to Riz Ahmed and John Turturro. It's smartly written, I think. Even if we have quibbles with a couple of plot turns, the dialogue was phenomenal. The way it was shot with some of the sort of lingering shots on whether it's John Torturo's feet or an empty apartment. Yeah. It was really, really well done on every level.
So much good visual television on right
yeah.
now. You know, even shows that have other kind of flaws. We've talked a lot about Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot is always on point visually. You know
I don't.
What I mean?
We didn't talk about the most recent. Oh, of course not, because we record on Wednesday. One of the tricks of recording on Wednesday is, by the time anyone hears the podcast, the next episode of Mr. Robot that we haven't talked about yet is available to them.
Yeah. I never think about that actually.
Yeah, neither do I. But this week it's particularly relevant because, and we're not. I don't think we need to talk too much about it. But just on that note that you just made, slight spoiler alert, after after what we both thought was sort of a disappointing reveal regarding Elliot in the previous week, this last episode had no Elliot in it whatsoever. And it was strictly the rest of the story, which has actually gotten pretty darn interesting.
Yeah.
And also, I thought was a reminder of how incredible the show looks and feels a lot of the time. And yeah, that is one where it really feels like each week Sam
Esmail, yeah,
however you say it, is making a film in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, he's making a short film, and some of them aren't as good as others. And again, we may quibble over plot twists, but the way they look is excellent.
Always good. You know, I would not complain if they found an excuse for Portia Doubleday to sing karaoke and hit on old dudes every week, I would watch that.
Man, she's kind of mesmerizing, isn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah. I do think, though...
Was there a hopeful element to that?
A little bit. Yeah. I do think that there's now a hole in my Sunday night schedule, you know, with the night of and Roadies ending. And
oh, yeah, and Roadies ended in what I thought was a beautifully Cameron Crowe-y, Roadies-y, lighthearted but enjoyable way.
Yeah, and we've talked about the show. It is.
We don't need to talk more about it.
It has flaws. I do just want to say that I know the ratings have not been awesome, but I'm really hoping that we get a second season of Roadies.
Oh, me too. I loved it. I think there should be more TV like that.
Yeah, me too. I want to spend more time with those characters. And some of it was just, look, there's a little bit of escapism that it's just fun to spend time in that world.
No, there's a lot of escapism. I mean, don't lie. It's a lot of escapism in that show.
I'd much rather have that escapism than Ballers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where
I'm watching Ballers, I agree with you.
Yeah, me too. But like, it's just like, this is an inconsequential, lightweight half an hour. Whereas, you know, there's a little bit more to chew on in that.
You know what it is?
And some great music, by the way.
And what?
And some great music, by the way.
Oh, the music is phenomenal. Yeah. And first of all, independent of anything that stars Carla Gugino, I'm in. So you've got that going for you, Roadies. But also, the difference between a show like Roadies and a show like Ballers, right, is they're both ultimately escapism. In Ballers, really the entertainment is in like the over-the-top athlete lifestyle, not unlike the way Entourage was entertaining. And, you know, there's an element of like male child wish fulfillment that can be funny and fun. But you never feel like the emotional well-being of the characters makes any difference, or like that there's any real stakes even for the characters from an emotional perspective. Whereas a show like Roadies is about the relationships, and then it's just cast in this fun atmosphere. You know, it's more an interpersonal show than Ballers, which is a show about flash and glamour.
Yeah, no, I would say that's I would agree with that 100%. And there's just more interesting things in life than flash and glamour. Not that I don't enjoy watching a little flash and glamour and some boobs every now and again.
Yeah, a lot of boobs on Ballers, that's for sure.
Yeah, and occasionally gratuitous boobs on Roadies too. So more in that category. All right, so should we move on to
straight up boob talk?
Yeah, straight up. Straight to. We should talk about maybe for the next pod. Things coming up this fall that people might want to check out, or things that we're looking forward to.
Yeah, we should
have to do some research.
Preview. I don't know if you saw the special preview episode of The Voice with its new. Oh no, is that not what you?
No, never mind.
That's fine.
I was watching Bachelor in Paradise.
Just in case anyone thought we're only watching good television.
Yeah. They got to prune that show back a little bit, man.
Which, Bachelor in Paradise or The Voice?
3 hours a week of Bachelor in Paradise is a big ask.
You know what? Honestly, I get the sort of ironic appeal, and even the non-ironic appeal of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise. What I don't get is how people like you with jobs and responsibilities and also other things to do in your spare time and things to watch, I don't understand how you carve 3 hours a week. Sometimes in regular Bachelor season, it's like 5 hours of trash in 1 week.
There's never five. Like, four is the most. Oh, every okay. once so in two, a while, they'll double two, up with two-hour episodes.
Like, get out of here.
But, most of the time, you know, during... All right, so it works out. Like, you know, now there's 3 hours. It's two nights, but it's during the summer. So there's not as much competing.
I know, but 3 hours of that in a week.
And during the regular year, it's 2 hours. And then there's an inordinate amount of commercials. So I always watch on DVR and fast forward a lot. So, you know what I mean? I fast forward through all, you know, because they do the, hey, coming up later on the show, like 17 times. So right, I fast forward through all of that. And, you know, when you get down to it, it's manageable.
It's just a lot of time.
Also,
to
fast
commit.
Forward through bad dates. You know what I mean? Like, all sorts. There's lots.
Yeah,
of, there's lots
you
to get fast forward.
Your finger firmly on the jump ahead button. You'll make it not too long.
Yeah, there's plenty of time for junk. Don't worry. Don't you worry about me.
All right. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about something weighty. Should we get into this? You know, we're going to veer out of the toy department for this because you pretty much have to when you're discussing Colin Kaepernick.
Look, I think you know, our justification is simply that we didn't veer out of the toy department. The world veered in.
Yeah.
And I feel like as much as this is not going to be a lot of fun for anybody, if we're going to be a podcast that talks about issues in sports and entertainment, then when the biggest issue in sports is not that fun, we still got to do it.
Yeah, agreed. And I think so much of this really is about the intersection of sports and American culture and what each of them says about the other, right?
I guess so, yeah.
All right, now you're doing sports radio essentially at ground zero.
Yep.
Of all of this.
And I've been hosting the last I hosted the last two yesterday and the day before, so you know, I was really talking to the people, as it were.
You're in one of the more generally progressive areas of the country.
Yep.
Which, by the way, is, it, you know, it's not a, the Bay Area is certainly not a political monolith.
No, it is not.
It just leans one way. What is the take on the ground about all of this?
Well, you certainly have people that are reasonable and understand what America is actually supposed to stand for, and realize that while they may not love his chosen method or agree with the agree with the specific protest he made, recognize and respect his right to do so in those circumstances. For the record, in case somehow someone missed this, Colin Kaepernick sat through the national anthem and actually has done it for 3 weeks now. It's just he wasn't in uniform the first 2 weeks, so nobody cared. So he sat down during the national anthem as a protest, and when asked about it, said it was, you know, he was protesting racial oppression. And that, and by the way, spoke rather eloquently, extremely eloquently by Colin Kaepernick standards, because he has historically not been someone who even has much to say at all to the media, and spoke for about 15 or 20 minutes about social issues and why he feels like he needs to do this, and you know, mentioned he has other things in the works in terms of supporting the Black Lives Matter movement, among other things. So some of the reaction is with respect, but a lot, and it, you know, I don't want to say most because it's probably a vocal minority, but there is a lot of how dare he. There is a lot of I know there's free speech, but you never disrespect the flag. One of my favorite, which means least favorite, arguments is, how dumb is that? He's disrespecting the very flag that gives him the right to protest.
Yeah, this is one of those things.
It's so backwards. Backwards, because as I said, I had a conversation with a friend about this the other night for about an hour, just trying to make sense of it. And one of the things that I ended up saying in the course of this discussion is that when I think about the flag and what it stands for, I mean, I know this is slightly hyperbolic, but in a way, Colin Kaepernick's almost respecting the flag more than anyone by protesting it, because that's what the flag is all about. If you're an American exercising your right to free speech as a protest to government oppression, the flag of our rebel country is like, hell yeah, man, get yours. That's what the flag represents. It's one of the things the flag stands for. And so the notion that he's un-American, and look, these are not original thoughts. If you've been reading the internet on these subjects, you've seen these, but it's the only reasonable take, in my view. this guy is being definitively American by attempting to stand up for what he believes in, by taking on the government to a degree in doing so. He is taking a quintessentially American stand. And look, I understand some people have a reverence for the flag that makes this upsetting. But that's what a protest is supposed to be. It's attracting attention to a cause. It's raising awareness for a cause by upsetting the order of things, by disrupting, by civil disobedience is another big protest thing that people like to complain about. Oh, I get it. You have the right to free speech, but don't mess up my commute by standing in the road. Well, they want to mess up your commute because that's what protest is. It's upsetting the apple cart so people pay attention to your cause. And usually it's the result of your cause being ignored at great length for a considerable period of time.
Yeah, I have different issues with that. Not so much in terms of people's right to do it, but it's general effectiveness.
Well, and that's fine. Whether it's effective is a separate issue.
That's another tangent. Obviously, you know, I think we're coming from a similar place in terms of thinking about, you know, what it means to be an American and how fundamentally American this is to, you know, in a nonviolent way, with a guy who has a platform. Obviously, we're now having a conversation about this to take that and start this conversation, and knowing that that it's going to be unpopular. You know, to me, there's real courage in what Colin Kaepernick's doing, even if you don't agree.
And by the way, that courage extends to the fact that this could cost him his career.
Yes, indeed. At a time when his career is sort of just, you know, on the merits of the playing field is already on the balance.
That's right.
In the balance.
This could be the final. He is in a place, talent and ability wise, where something like this for a lot of teams could be a final straw of like, well, we just don't want to deal with this guy.
Yeah, I think that's almost unquestionably the case. So, but the thing that I think about is, I feel like it's easy for us to feel this way because we see the merit in his position. How would we feel if he took this stand for something that we found offensive? You know, well, what if he came out and we're like, I don't want to salute the flag because, you know, America is controlled by Jews who are the Illuminati and run the media, and I can't get justice in a world that, you know, in a country ruled by Jews.
Well, in that case, that I would say he's crazy and very misguided, but has every right to do this. I mean, there have been plenty of political displays in this country that I don't like. There have been plenty of protests that I'm not on board with, but I have never, ever, ever said, how dare he, or that's un-American. I might say the attitude that all Jews must go is un-American, but protesting the anthem is not un-American.
Yeah, I agree. You know, have you seen you know, there have been some things written about the song itself. Have you seen the, you know, the full lyrics to the national anthem?
Or even just, I mean, all of our, look, it's, we can be like, oh, well, the anthem's history, and that's true. But it's really the country's history, and it's the country's present. And that's what, you know, we're talking a lot about the method, and look, if I'm of a mind that even if we're talking about the method of protest, and even if it's, you know, one side shouting down a bunch of you know, alleged patriots who are complaining about how disrespectful it is, the fact that we're talking about even the method of protest is progress, because ultimately I think the goal of something like this that Kaepernick did is to force people to have some of these conversations.
Yeah.
And right now there's not a more important, worthy conversation to have in this country than about the way people of color are being treated, especially by police.
Well, and this whole discussion and that larger discussion, brings up something for me that I feel like is a symptom of our recent society, in that we are so caught up in symbols, and the surface of discussion, and without the nuance, and this speaks directly to that, because in so many people's minds, Kaepernick is desecrating a symbol, and this symbol means XXX, X, Y, and Z, and therefore Kaepernick is against X, Y, and Z. He's against our military and against our founding fathers and against the Constitution, right, or whatever.
But
that people will say.
But people only want to use the symbol to signify their own agenda.
Right. Like, even though he was very specific and articulate.
Right. I don't understand
about
why
exactly
we have to,
finds egregious, which is none of those things.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is one of my huge issues with the thing, is like, all these people want to assign meaning to the symbol. Oh, but this is what the flag means. When I stand in salute, I've seen articles by people who I respect or did saying, he missed the point, because when I stand, I'm saluting the military and the people that have fought and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, that's great that that's what you're saluting. Colin Kaepernick told you what this protest means. He stood there for 15 minutes with media members that he's never spent more than 2 consecutive minutes talking to tell you exactly what he meant. So why are we bickering about what it might have meant to someone else?
Yeah. I agree.
He specifically voiced his support for military personnel. He specifically said, this is what my protest is. So there's all this hand-wringing about what you think it means. Well, we don't have to worry about that, because thankfully, Colin Kaepernick's a human being with a voice, and he used it articulately to describe the issue.
Yep.
I find it very frustrating that we can't move past that.
It's extremely frustrating. It's also frustrating to me that we're at this place where when people talk about finding justice for a specific group of people, it then becomes a zero-sum game where it's like, if you want justice for black people, then you are against, cops. Or, and that's like when you make it that simple, then we can't really have a conversation,
Here's what we need, and I think one of the things that's been very encouraging to me is, after a day where I felt like I saw mostly vitriol and fury on Monday, because even though this is all happening over the weekend, like, it all pours into the radio on Monday.
Right.
And Monday was a ton of anger, and I was in a lot of unfortunate debates on Twitter. Tuesday, still some of that, but I don't know if you noticed the hashtag Veterans for Kaepernick.
No, I have not seen that.
That's what we need. Because at a certain point, when an alleged but really just keyboard patriot screams at me that I don't understand what the flag means, and that I had a guy tell me no veterans would ever support Kaepernick, 99% think he's a horrible person for this. And then he was like, show me one veteran. And so I showed him like 3 veterans that were supporting Kaepernick. And he was like, see, that's the 1%, 99%. Trust me, you don't understand. You didn't serve, dude. You didn't serve. You don't know. You didn't serve. You don't understand patriotism. And you know what? I think that's insane. But there's only so much I can say to that.
And
because I didn't serve.
And that's what I mean. This is, to me, is the core of the problem, in that not only no one makes the effort to try and understand other people's experiences, and you have people who go, you can't possibly understand
Well, but you
my
know
experience.
What? And there's two sides to it. One side is what you're saying. It's insane because I can't accept that in 2016 you must put on a military uniform to understand patriotism. I'm sorry. I can love my country without wanting to pick up a gun.
Right, totally. And you can't have a monopoly on patriotism. You can have a look, it's possible that I guess I couldn't understand military service without having gone through it.
Well, that's the thing. But I don't think you and I can possibly understand.
I'm an American. I can understand patriotism.
Of course. Of course. But also, there's a level at which I have to be like, look, don't tell me whether I can be a patriot. Don't tell me you have to be in the military to understand patriotism. But also, there's a certain level at which, like, I really can't tell you certain things. But because I can't say to a veteran, you don't understand what this country stands for, even if I kind of think that's true. So when other veterans speak up and say, yeah, I put on a uniform and I did it for exactly this sort of liberty, those are people who, to me, A, are the truest of heroes because they put on the uniform for the right reasons and understand the principles that they're fighting for. But also, they change the conversation in a meaningful and important way. And I think what we almost never see, and the most disappointing thing of all of this to me, was the response of the San Francisco Police Officers Association, the police union in San Francisco, which in the last year has had multiple racism controversies with cops sending vile text messages back and forth, one after another.
They keep finding more.
Yes. And so for an organization, obviously, maybe not at the very front of the line, but in the top pantheon of major police departments with serious race issues to deal with, their response was to literally craft a letter that used meaningless numbers, alleged statistics, to essentially say to Colin Kaepernick, hey, buddy, black people are killing a lot more black people than we ever did.
Oh, God. That's the response?
It's a letter. You have to read it. It's one of the most horrifying things you'll ever
see.
That
makes you feel like you're like there will never be justice.
Exactly.
That's disgusting.
They wrote something to the effect of, we would love to hear Mr. Kaepernick's perspective on the more than 8,000 African Americans murdered by African Americans in the last year. And it's like,
why? What does that have to do with anything?
First of all, yeah, that's a problem. That's something that
it's not. That's not the problem we're discussing right now.
Exactly. It's something we should definitely also commit resources to. But you know what? The people, the other African Americans who killed that absurd, meaningless, random 8,000 number of other African Americans, they're not paid to protect us. They're not trusted with the safety of the community. They're not given guns as their job. And so when they kill people, it's tragic, it's bad, it's wrong, but it's not a horrifying violation of the very reason they are here.
Yeah.
So they're not comparable, and it's not an argument, and as you say, maybe more to the point, it's a random change of subject.
Yeah. False equivalency is another thing that I think, if we're talking about things that are just the way that our system of communication is broken down, that's right up there. Just people who go, oh yeah, well what about this thing? That is not at all the point.
How come all lives don't matter? No, all lives do matter.
No one's saying they don't matter.
Exactly. Here's the problem. There's a huge portion of this country and the world that regularly treats black lives as if they don't matter.
Right. And all lives have some things that they don't have to worry about. You know what I mean? That other people do. That's what we're trying to address.
White lives matter. It's just everyone has already agreed to that.
Yeah.
So we don't have to talk about it all that much.
This issue is personal to me, or at least I relate to it in a personal way. One, because like Colin, I'm mixed, and part of that is African American. So I think sometimes people and we've seen it. Some of the reaction to Rodney Harrison, like, oh, he's not really black.
Well, did you see the correction? Because the most mystifying and incredible thing about Rodney Harrison is that when you hear that comment, 2 days after, actually, I guess like 4 days after the actual incident from a guy covering the league. You assume what he's saying is, oh, he was adopted by white parents. He didn't really.
Yeah, he just didn't know.
He literally didn't know that the guy was mixed. He covers the league.
Yeah, and like,
it's his job.
This guy was a quarterback in a Super Bowl. That's really astounding.
I believe Rodney Harrison played against Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm fairly certain
it strains credulity, to be honest. But my point was is that like I'm a person, I have a really hard time watching old like black and white movies. Because I it's really hard for me to put myself in a world where I know that I would have been treated as inferior and not really literally kind of not allowed to be part of the picture, you know?
Yeah.
I just find that really difficult, and I can relate to feeling like the other and feeling like, wow, we have a national anthem that literally takes pleasure in the death of slaves. This is our national anthem that's supposed to represent us, and maybe this doesn't represent me the same way that you feel it might represent you. And maybe it doesn't symbolize some of the same things that it feels like it might symbolize for you. And I just wish that people could at least understand how someone, or say someone who, you know, served in World War II and was discriminated against overseas because they were black, and even though they served and fought for these rights and the flag and all the stuff that people are fighting for, they come back and then are discriminated against again in their own country where freedom supposedly exists. Like, where is the line?
That still happens to a degree.
Like, were black people, when this song was written, or in the 1860s, were they supposed to feel the same way about the flag? It was their flag and their anthem then, too. Like, was that okay?
Allegedly.
Was it the same in the 60s? Is that okay? And I just – it's amazing to me, you know, you see the hot takes that were all inevitable. You know, people like Boomer Esiason weighing in with nonsense. And all of these same people were glowingly saluting Muhammad Ali.
Exactly. But you know what, Madden, as you well know, those people would not have saluted Muhammad Ali in his time.
Right. Absolutely. And that's my whole point.
Down to.
And Martin Luther King, a lot of people who are, you know, universally, beloved in our culture and viewed as courageous were incredibly unpopular at the time.
Exactly. And look, no one thinks Colin Kaepernick is Martin Luther King.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not trying to make that comparison.
No, I know. Yeah. Or even Muhammad Ali. But he did choose to take a stand. He did. And some of it was a little clumsy, okay? It's not perfect. But the fact of the matter is, he stepped out. He did, even for all the people who are like, well, if he really wants to help, why doesn't he spend some of that millions of dollars? Blah, 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 blah. He said he's doing other things. I assume some of that involves money. So let's give him a second to tell us about the other things he's doing, which he said he will. But even if he never does anything else, he took personal risk in this. He knows it's going to be an unpopular stance in some circles. He knows the NFL doesn't like distractions, and he must know that his own career is somewhat on the verge here.
Yep.
So he took personal risk to stand up for something that he believes in. And anyone who's suggesting Tony La Russa that
Went
on my station and called Colin Kaepernick, said, I think he's in – he said, I never saw an ounce of concern for the oppressed when he was on top, quote, flashing his ass, end quote, which to me, I don't understand what that means besides he's black. And Tony La Russa said, I believe it's insincere. Which leads me to believe that, A, Tony La Russa didn't read any of the things that Kaepernick actually said and didn't really follow the story very well at all. And, B, neither he nor the vast majority of the people involved in this debate have ever spoken to Colin Kaepernick or know anything about him. They don't know what changes he's gone through between the ages of 23 and 27. And to suggest that you can speak to his sincerity when he knew he was taking an unpopular stance and did it anyway for something that he says he believes in, I can't imagine why he would do it if he wasn't sincere.
Yeah, no, that's weird. What would you get out of it? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, you think this is attention he wants? The guy has avoided media attention his whole career.
Yeah, it's weird. All right, so let's. I think we ought to change gears.
Are we done with me screaming now?
I just wonder. You know. All right. Well, I'll ask one last question. Like, does all this, in my feelings about all this, and I sort of asked this question another way before, but like, does this mean I have to listen to Kurt Schilling now?
No, because okay. You don't have to listen to Colin Kaepernick. And by all means, if there are people out there saying, well, I respect his right to protest, but I just don't think black people have an argument. Well, those people are scumbags who don't pay attention to the news, but they're well within their rights to take that position.
Yeah,
you don't have to listen to Kurt Schilling.
And
you
I guess
just
no
have
one...
to accept that he gets to say whatever he wants.
Sure.
Yeah.
And by the way, you can find what Kaepernick did disrespectful. I mean, I think it's a dumb position, but you're certainly well within your rights.
Yeah, you can find it disrespectful.
To hold it.
But don't call it un-American.
Yeah, I agree.
By the way, disrespect a great legacy of American tradition.
Yeah, agreed. It, literally, like there's a whole flag about it that people are still trying to defend.
Right.
All right. Let's move on because I have a very important question to ask you.
Okay.
We are days away from the start of the college football season.
Actually, I hate to correct you.
Yeah, you're right. There already was a game, expert. But
there was a trash game.
You know that
Hawaii
game didn't
Cal
count because if you watched
it,
all they did was talk about other games that were going to be happening this weekend.
This is a great opening weekend, I will say. I'm not a college football head, but as you just look down the schedule and see like big schools playing each other, ranked schools playing each other, it feels bigger than the average opening weekend.
Yeah, they've spruced it up a little bit this year, and I'm fully prepared to spend an entire late Labor Day weekend inside, gorging on football. And that brings me.
I'll be in Denver, gorging on more fish music.
All right. That brings me to my very important question. Which is, why aren't you into college football, man? And this is a thing I'd almost like to ask the entire Bay Area because it was one of the most – it's the gaping hole in the Bay Area sports experience.
First of all, that's true. Second of all, I can't speak for the Bay Area, but for me, it's because it's not good.
Yeah, see, and we've gone down this road with college basketball –
Yeah, that's the
before.
Same thing for me. I feel like I have a lot of sports to watch, and so I try to watch the good ones, which are the pro ones for the most part.
Yeah, but, and look, I'll accept I can accept the argument that college basketball, the talent pool has been diluted.
Oh, basketball's much worse.
Yeah, and the style of play is poor. I flat out reject that notion for football. Now, look, is it the NFL? Of course it's not. You're talking about professionals and a much smaller pool of players. And, yeah, of course the quality of play, particularly the quarterback play, is going to be better. Yeah, of course.
But the style
of play and the offensive innovations and the excitement of play in college football is so great, unlike college basketball.
Are they offensive innovations, though, or are they just tricksy silliness?
No, they're not just tricksy. And regardless of whether they're silly or innovations, they're all entertaining as hell. There's so many entertaining games. And by the way, you almost have to say they are innovations because clearly so many of them have filtered their way into the NFL.
Okay, well, here's I guess, what I would say. I agree with that. The games are much better to watch than college basketball. I mean, much better. They're also incredibly long.
They are a little long.
And
I can't quibble with that.
What's that?
I can't quibble with that. They're a little long.
Okay. And they also, though, as much as, maybe there's five games every weekend that are electric and something crazy happens to make them exciting, there's 35 to 40 other games that are garbage. And, like, you just don't know because we know so little about these guys.
No, but that's true of any sport. There's going to be good games and garbage games every week.
I guess, but I kind of know which NBA game to watch. So maybe it's my own lack of knowledge. But yeah. I feel like even some of the college games that are supposed to be good, then you get 6-3 LSU-Alabama, and over on the game you weren't watching, Bowling Green and Akron played a real barn.
Look, I'll defend 6-3 LSU Alabama to the death, but that's a story for another day. You know, look, some just because game has defense doesn't mean it's bad. But anyway,
I agree with that.
I'm
a Bears fan. Of course I agree with that.
For years, the principal argument against college football, kind of the irrefutable, was, well, God, they just vote on a champion. How stupid is that? But now that's gone. So I just look,
the playoff definitely helps.
There's so many interesting narratives and storyline. And if you're like me and you enjoy atmosphere and passion and great announcers and all of like the things that make an excellent TV product, like there's so much good really? In college football. Yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
think the announcers are that good top to bottom?
Well, I'm not talking about top to bottom, but I'm talking, you don't literally have to watch everything.
Oh, of course not. But I mean, like,
but there's so many Vern Lundquist and Joe Tessitore's and Brad Nessler's and Fowler's and Herb Street's and Reese Davis's and like, college game. The pregame show is awesome in college football. I mean, come on.
I don't go cuckoo for Lee Corso putting on a hat.
It's way more than Lee Corso putting on a hat.
Are you
way
sure?
More.
Yeah. I think that's the main thing.
Because in that case, you just watch the last 5 minutes, and you're good.
Look, I get it. I the pageantry and the passion, it's fine. Whatever. It's just the football is not as good, and it takes a really long time. And here's what happens is it's not unlike my attempts to watch the Premier League.
We got to fix that, too, by the way.
What's that?
We got to fix that, too.
I've been watching Chelsea. Go Chelsea. Eden Hazard, he's a boss.
Yeah, he's back. He's back. Yeah. I hate that they're good again.
Go Chelsea.
I really want you to get into this so that we can actually have fights about it.
On you, Chelsea. I don't know if that's a thing. the point is, I find myself sitting on a Saturday turning on college football, and after 5 minutes going, man, I'm going to spend 13 hours watching football tomorrow. I got to get outside.
Mm.
Part of it is I don't have winter.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. I don't know. I find myself often wishing Sundays were a little more like Saturdays from a football perspective. Not that I'm not going to disagree, obviously, like we've conceded the point that ultimately the quality of football is better. But that doesn't mean that Saturdays can't be as interesting, if not more interesting, than what happens on Sunday.
I think maybe in week 10 and 11, but
I mean, I honestly think it's a function of it's a cultural thing in that you grew up in a pro sports town. Not that they didn't have college football. It's like the Bay Area has college football, but
yeah,
it's not the same thing.
People are crazy for college football in Chicago.
People,
Chicago is such a big city with so many Midwestern transplants, and the Midwest is a hotbed of college football.
But it's kind of the same thing, though, right? Where it's like you go to bars, right? And you can see that in San Francisco. There are tons of bars you go to on a Saturday that are college football obsessed.
Yeah, but not like Chicago.
You know what I mean?
Not like Chicago. No, I mean, look, I'm not a big college football guy, but college football was big for people where I grew up.
Yeah, I just don't know how you miss out on that in Big Ten country. Like, it's so great. I mean, their entire network's devoted to it. Entire profitable networks.
There's a network called True TV that I don't even know what's on it besides the NCAA tournament. Like, don't try to sell me on network
That's fair. By the way, I saw a chart of the revenues of the various sports networks. I may tweet this at you later. It's actually kind of fascinating to see how much more money ESPN is making than everybody else, but like where are the other channels rate against like ESPN2 or the SEC network versus the MLB network and all that stuff. It's I don't know. If you're like me and you like TV and sports, it's fascinating. All right, we need to get out of here soon. I want to throw one quick topic at you. Okay. We talked a little bit about the MTV Awards, which nobody watched this year.
Does anyone watch MTV?
No, MTV is hurting a little bit. And I kind of wanted to bring it up in just the – because I didn't watch it either. So I'm not going to get into – I don't think we need to get into what happened or what didn't happen.
I didn't watch it, so I don't think we can get into what happened.
Well, I'll start with this. Is there anything that would get you interested in watching an MTV VMAs in the future?
The answer to that realistically is probably no, but I would pretend I might watch for good music performances if they publicized it the right way.
Yeah, I just –
if I heard Kendrick and Chance were going to do a performance together, I would want to see that. I'd probably end up watching it on YouTube the next day, but I would be interested.
I think it's interesting that we're in a time, you know, where award shows have more cultural currency than they've had in the past, and yet this one is clearly falling off a bridge.
Well, these are awards for nothing.
Yeah.
The awards are not meaningful.
Well, and that's – I mean it all comes down ultimately, right, to just the lack of cultural cachet – of a music video now, you know, and you know, people will say, well, what about Beyonce Lemonade? And I would say, well, that's a more of a statement about the cultural cachet of Beyonce, and B, like, is anyone talking about the individual videos in Lemonade
exactly
today? Right.
No, we're
four
about
or 5 months from the release of that thing. You know what I mean? Like when we
even when it came out, it was about the overall effort. It wasn't like no one was looking at that as individual music videos, I don't think.
Right. And it's like, you know, if I said to you Under the Bridge, there's probably an image of that video right now that pops up in your head, isn't it? Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like videos were iconographic. Is that if I'm getting the word right?
Iconographic.
Iconographic. Yes. All right. Back in the day.
Iconic, probably. Is
iconic,
the word
maybe
you're
is the
for.
Yeah. you're probably right. That's much shorter. Back in the day, these images, like they stated our culture. They were talked about. They meant something. And now it's like, yes, there are videos on YouTube, and people are out there really watching them. And you kind of go off into your own thing.
How many of any given YouTube music videos views, how many of those are people who clicked it and then didn't look at it and just
right
listened?
or the same person clicking it 10,000 times,
right?
You know, and like or the act literal click farms like in Silicon Valley,
right. Yeah.
Trying to up hit counts for artists and things.
Yeah,
there's no cultural conversation about it, so it feels really weird to give out awards from it, and it feels so divorced from MTV. You know, it's interesting to me, like, you know, MTV Classic debuted a little while ago, and I, you know, a lot of people are excited about it, myself included.
Because it's just airing videos.
No, it's not just airing videos, and that's like it's airing old Real Worlds and old Beavis and Buttheads, right. And old you know, I don't know if Singled Out's maybe, I don't know if Singled Out's actually in the thing, but I'm just throwing stuff out there.
Gosh,
it's
I
a lot
hope
of
so.
You know, The Hills and you know, lots of old MTV programming from the 90s and 2000s.
I can't believe The Hills is old MTV programming.
I know,
okay.
But it is. And there's a strain of this now that's like, well, they should be just, why aren't they showing videos? That's what made MTV MTV. And the thing is like, MTV Classic is rebranded VH1 Classic. And VH1 Classic was literally just doing that, just mostly showing old videos. And no one watched it. No one.
Here's why.
No
it's
one wants
same
to watch videos on television. I know we grew up that way, and I love doing it, but people don't want that now. They just don't.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's suffering from a problem that your business, music radio specifically, has also run into, which is the old format of people tune in to wait to listen to the song they want to hear or wait to see the video they want to see. Doesn't make any sense, because if someone has a specific video or song in mind, there's a million ways they can see or listen to it right away. So if you're music radio, you got to think about doing things like exposing people to new music, like creating events and stuff that they can't get from Spotify. I'm not sure.
I'm not actually sure that's the strategy, but we'll get into some radio things, radio programming things at some point.
That aside, the point is you have to come up with something else.
So
the idea of just playing videos, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, look, if you know what you want, right, I mean, radio is or MTV, whatever, it's a linear stream of content, right? It's, you know, sometimes we'll call that a push technology, right, where you're just pushing stuff down the line. Sure. Whereas, you know, YouTube or Spotify or whatever, these on-demand things, they're pull technology. You kind of pull out what you want of it, right?
Right.
And that's great if you know what you want. If you know what you want, of course, okay, it's better to just go get the thing that you want than for wait for somebody else to just throw it at you. The, you know, the thing that a linear stream can do is give you something that you didn't know that you wanted. Or if you don't know, or if you're at a place where you don't know what it is that you want, or you need something else in your brain that you didn't have there already, or you just don't, you're just sort of overwhelmed by choice and want someone to make that right choice for you, that's, you know, that's what a linear stream does well.
But that doesn't make as much sense with music videos as it does with music on the radio.
Yeah, perhaps. Perhaps. I mean, the reality is that, look, most people are overwhelmed by the amount, the unlimited choice that's available to them in all forms of media, music, television, videos, whatever. You know, you could literally watch anything you wanted to watch video-wise on YouTube right now. And I'm guessing when confronted with that idea, you might have a hard time even picking 5 or 10 things, because that's what's the room is for in your brain. So right, that's where professional programming people come in. But all of that is very divorced from, you would sit there and watch music videos when you have the option to watch all of this television that we talk about every week and all of these movies that we sometimes talk about when we get around to it.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way anymore. And I don't know that there's a fix for MTV. I mean, obviously their strategy has just been, well, let's try and create crazy buzzed moments that people will talk about. And ultimately they're just searching for the next Taylor Kanye moment.
Right.
And but it just rings hollow, right? It's so obvious and thirsty. You know what I mean?
Thirsty is the perfect word, because they've made the mistake that so many people make in so many different arenas, which is not realizing that what makes the Taylor Kanye thing interesting and electric is its spontaneity.
Yeah.
And it's like, so anytime you court spontaneity, you're screwing it up.
Yeah. If your whole thing is like, hey guys, we invited Beyonce this year, something might happen, you know?
Right. We're giving Kanye 5 minutes to be crazy, then it's like, okay, so I guess Kanye's going to be crazy for 5 minutes, but that won't be surprising or interesting.
Right. You know where else I can find that? Twitter.
So, all day long,
yeah. So I just and it's, I don't know that it's going to be with us much longer, and I don't think anyone's going to mourn it. You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
And you know, when you're selling youth culture, and the youth move on, it's a quick drop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's hard for me. Look, I can't speak for millennials, but it's hard for me to imagine millennials being like, ah, we need to save the MTV VMAs, you know?
Well, just ask MySpace how quickly it goes wrong when the youth move on.
Yeah, when's that going to happen to Facebook? We need to figure that out.
I don't know. I need it.
All right. You need Facebook?
Yeah, just for like planning parties and communicating with old friends.
Can't wait for Facebook to be over. all right. Do you have any homework you want to assign to folks?
Yeah, well, I have homework I want to assign to us.
Okay.
Which is like, we see some movies, for God's sakes. We're supposed to get to movies in this podcast as well. And
I did see, by the way, because you watched it the other week, I did see Bad Moms.
Right? Wasn't it lovable?
I didn't really. It wasn't
really?
No.
Oh, God. I just thought it was so enjoyable. I'm such a big fan of all of those women.
I do like the three women. Like, yes, it was well cast. And it's not that there aren't moments, and all three of them are likable, but it didn't grab me. We don't need to get a long critique of Bad Moms, but it's riddled with, it's kind of this cheesy pop music, and I felt like sort of the humor matched that. You know what I mean? It often relied on it, like, you know, hey, here's a Rihanna song with housewives dancing funky to it. You know what I mean?
That.
So, I don't know. Didn't do it for me. If you're going to see a movie like that, go see Sausage Party would be my recommendation.
Okay, well, I still want to do that.
Yeah.
But we should see something more
ambitious.
Yeah. Ambitious. Good word.
Is that thing out there right now?
I don't know. We're going to have to figure that out.
I'll tell you what I would like to see, and I actually don't know if I have access to it around here, is Don't Think Twice, which is a movie that Mike Birbiglia did about improv. It's supposed to be very good.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard about that. I do want to see that as well. Also, you know what's supposed to be good is the Jeff Bridges movie.
Really?
Hell or High Water. It got very good Rotten Tomatoes ratings.
Is that a Western? I'm not familiar.
Ish. Yeah, it's Western adjacent, I believe.
But it's not the – I saw a trailer for like Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke in a Western.
No, that's a Magnificent Seven.
Oh, you're right, and you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably not going to be good, right?
I don't know. I'm intrigued by the cast, but remakes, you know?
Yeah. I know.
Anyway, see a movie. Let's talk about one.
Yeah, that's your word. See a movie. Does porn count? No, all right. I think it would be fun if we had a long, intense discussion about a porno movie one of these days. Okay. Just deep dived. No pun intended. All right.
Geez, it's time to stop.
It's, on that note, it's time to stop, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.